In this episode of Doctor Who Podshock 2011, we'll bring two series of Doctor Who instead of one, but no Daleks. Sylvester McCoy in The Hobbit. Live coverage from Doctor Who Podshock's 5th anniversary celebration. Convention reports. More adventure games. An interview with Deborah Watling and Graham Harper. Tom Baker returns again as the 4th Doctor. What's up with Amy Pond next year? All that and more in this episode of Doctor Who Podshock. The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode brought to you by Podshock supporting subscribers. Go to arttrap.com/podshocksupporter to become a supporting subscriber. Support the show and get extra content. This episode also brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player.
Live from the Botanic Institute, this is Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No.
Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock, from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy in its 25th year presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 221. My name is Ken Deep, alongside Mr. Louis Trapani.
Hello.
And across the great pond, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. James Naughton.
Hello.
Hello. We have a jam-packed show with some real big-time headline news coming out of the BBC press office about the split seasons. I think that's probably our lead, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Splitting next year into two series, if you will, two miniseries, as Stephen Moffat, the executive producer and lead writer of the series, as we all know, and if you don't know that by now, welcome to Doctor Who Podshock. This is a Doctor Who podcast. Well, next year they're going to be splitting, according to Stephen Moffat, is that he wanted to have a mid-season finale and to break it up, and this is could be good and bad, and there's two sides to this, as with many things, and I
think it's a great idea.
Well, I do as well.
As producer and host of this show, it's a great idea because I was looking for a break last series, and it was a relentless schedule that, you know, producing our show, you know, coinciding with the new episodes and all that, and I was looking for, you know, a week or two, but this time, what's happening now is that they're splitting the season up to two miniseries, if you will. There'll be 7 episodes leading up to Easter, and then there'll be a grand earth-shattering season finale, series finale, whatever, and then people will come back in autumn for the remaining 6 episodes.
I watched his interview from that Edinburgh Festival, and I know that the transcripts say that he said leading up to Easter, but when I watched him expressing this plan, I got the impression he said it was going to start on Easter. So you either go early to mid-March through to Easter for 7 episodes, or you start at Easter and you go to early June, which would put it roughly around the timetable that we've had, just shorter, meaning that, you know, April, May, June kind of thing. If they end it at Easter, then we're starting earlier. We're starting in early to mid-March and going to Easter, which I love, because to me, March is just, there's no holidays. It's just a dud. It's just a boring month to get through a long month. Having Doctor Who there, I think, is a great idea. It's a couple weeks after Gallifrey, which is fine with me. We're all in Doctor Who mode. We get home, and the clock is ticking on the start of a new season, and it ends around Easter, just prior to the nice weather coming in, because I really don't like the idea of watching Doctor Who in the warm weather. To me, it's always been a cold weather show, and when you have nice weather and bright sunlight and it's a children or a family show, people want to go outside and do things. They're not thinking, sit down and watch TV, or at least that's my impression, and the way my life is conducted as well. I want you nice weather. You're not thinking, sit down and watch television. You're watching it in daylight, which is totally ruins the atmosphere.
Well, I think that's part of the reason for this as well, is because of the ratings. As you'll get more viewers in the months where it's, you know, getting darker earlier during the summer months, people want to be out and enjoying the sunshine and enjoying the good weather.
You know, I think of November because of the anniversary is sort of Doctor Who time. So if we're dealing with, if we're thinking late September or October into November for the second half of the season, the days are getting shorter, the weather's getting cooler, kids are back to school. And so to me, that's traditional Doctor Who time. And then you stop, and then you have a little bit of a pause heading into the Christmas special. Then you stop, you have a little bit of a pause heading into the new season. I think it breaks it up very nicely. I'm for this. If you look at the way some of the American cable networks, as an example, the re-envisioning of Battlestar Galactica was split in two halves. The full season was split in half. It gives the writers and the production team a chance to rev up. It gives us two season openers. It gives us two season finales. But on a purely conspiracy theory portion of the program, and you know I'm always ready for one of these, I know that they had asked Alex Kingston to be more involved in the next series and perhaps even be a full-time companion or have her have an expanded role, the popularity of River Song. Perhaps scheduling-wise, this was a way of having her become a little more involved in the show, that perhaps she's in an episode or two in the first half, an episode or two in the second half, something along those lines, where for scheduling reasons they could bring the supporting cast, have the supporting cast be involved, especially people who might be actors involved in movie productions or some other things, in addition to the ratings, in addition to splitting it up. I think this might be a win-win on many fronts. So
yeah, well, I think you're right about it's a win-win for the production, you know, as far as the producing the show goes. And as I said, I could relate to it as well because, you know, it's parallel to my workload as well. So I can definitely relate to that. And as I was saying, as we both were saying, that it's a show that's better seen when it's, you know, when it's not sunny and beautiful outside and you're not competing with the
weather.
You
can't hide behind the couch if the sun is blazing outside and it's 80 degrees.
So now the good question, the good point that you make is the question whether it's going to be starting early, if it's leading up to Easter and then will pause, start, you know, at Easter and then come back in the autumn, or is it going to be starting at Easter? That's the question now.
Yeah, the question.
So the other factor involved here is I agree on one hand. I think it's good. It's for the production's sake, and also it's also a good thing for us as well. And it extends the series, and it's not a long wait that we have to wait until, you know, the series comes back, and it's just spread out a little further. On the negative side, though, just like V and now Caprica and all that, there's a good chance for casual fans, not the diehard fans. Of course, the diehard fans are going to come back and watch it again, but casual viewers may lose interest. I know that happened with me with V when that took a break and it came back, and when it came back, I just didn't care anymore. And even now, Caprica, I got into that show and it had some sort of, you know, mid-series finale, and if it comes back, yeah, I guess if I remember, I'll try to watch it again, but I've already lost interest in it now. It's tiptoeing on that borderline. The other factor is that by having a 1 year with two season openers and two finales, and there's going to be, it's just dividing up, you know, and having this grand earth-shattering never before cliffhanger that's going to be the cliffhanger of all cliffhangers and yada yada yada, it's just sometimes I just think it's just a bit too much, and it's just too much energy being built up to making these grand episodes where I just want a good storytelling, a good story, and it doesn't have to be something that's going to be so earth-shattering and so grand, you know. It just seems that traditionally we have several episodes, maybe three or four, leading up to a series finale that are dedicated for that, you know, and taking up storytelling time to tell that. And now it's going to, instead of being three episodes, it may be six. It may be six in the spring and then six in autumn.
Well, the dynamics of television have changed a little bit. We've become event television driven with a very special episode of ER. I mean, everything. It's not just 24 episodes of the A-Team flipping a Jeep upside down and saving the girl. You know, we've come to a point in our dramatic television structure that there has to be this build-up and this cliffhanger and this then and this arc and all these kind of things, not just in Doctor Who, but across the board. So I think what Moffat's trying to do is capitalize on event television. And
well, the good thing is it's only going to be the summer that we would have to wait. So it's unlike these other shows, like Caprica is like 9 months. And now, unfortunately, you know, with what's going on with Torchwood, even though they had a grand success last year, people now have to wait 2 years before we see Torchwood again. So, yeah. But, you know, that's apples and oranges, really. At least it's only going to be a few months. So now, depending on when it starts, if it ends at Easter, you know, if it pauses then it's maybe four or 5 months.
You have to remember that they tested the waters with the specials. People went from the Easter special to Waters of Mars, no problem. So this would be roughly the same kind of gap, maybe even a little bit shorter, depending on the starting points of each respective halves. So the groundwork was laid for all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I wasn't that big on the specials, but that's.
But also, it frees up the cast and the crew for an awful lot of other projects and
perhaps money.
Involved with money wise, it's better because from a budgeting perspective, you know, they may well be able to budget the first half of the series from this financial year, and then next series from the latter half of the series from the next financial year, so. Who knows? It may just be easier to plan, easier to logistically and all the rest of it to do it that way.
Yeah.
Well, this all comes from me, actually. I've been looking at that last series, that series we just done. I did sort of think what this show needs is a big event in the middle. It needs, I kept referring rather lamely to a mid-season finale, a huge event episode in the middle. And realized, how can I make that happen? It also occurs to me, we do 13 episodes of Doctor Who. That's, by the standard of any other drama series, that's two series worth. So what we're going to do this year is make it two series. Doctor Who will come back for seven episodes in Easter, build to an earth-shattering climax at episode seven. There will be a huge cliffhanger. Cliffhanger we could never do normally at the end of a series of Doctor Who, because it'd be too long until it came back. So an enormous, honestly game-changing cliffhanger for the Doctor and Amy and Rory. It'll just change everything for them. And in order to give you time to recover, we'll let you go off, have your summer holidays, and come back in the autumn for another six episodes for what will be, in fact, series seven, I suppose. The wrong expression would be to say we're splitting it. We're making actually two separate series. What I love about this idea is that it means for the kids, when kids see Doctor Who go off the air, as it stands, they will be noticeably taller by the time it comes back. You know, it's an age for children to wait for that. It's an age for me because I love it so much, but I don't get taller, just fatter. But with this, you're never going to be more than a few months from the new series of Doctor Who. You've got someone heckling.
Yeah.
You've got six episodes. You've got the Easter series. You've got the autumn series, and you've got the Christmas special. Never more than a few months from the next series.
That's great. And then, of course, yeah, I guess you get a second load of marketing as well. So you have a build-up to one series, build-up to a second
Tart
series.
That I am. And it does occur to me we now have two first nights and two finales.
Yeah, exactly.
We have twice as many event episodes as we have before.
Karen, it's exciting, isn't it?
It's so exciting.
It's a word exciting again, but you know,
yeah,
it's
and
worth
I'm really
using.
Intrigued by episode 7,
which
I don't know anything about. You won't tell anyone.
When you say that episode 7 of the next series will be the biggest cliffhanger of Doctor Who in the modern era, is that what you're saying? Or ever, or...
I think it's going to be a doozy. That's my opinion.
What?
A doozy, a good one.
A good one, okay. And do you know what it is? Do you know what that is?
Yes, I know what it is. I know exactly what it is. Word for word what it is, yeah.
Okay.
It'll be a belter.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. That is where this session ends.
Otherwise, I'd have told you. But sadly, the session's over.
So, I mean, personally, I like it, but I think, you know, there are some concerns about it, but... You know, we'll see. But I mean, personally, from a strictly personal point of view, as I keep on saying, it's something that I think is good.
In Moffat, we trust.
All right. Well, on a related note, it's also coming out of that same Edinburgh or whatever TV festival that this news came out of. Also, news came that we won't be seeing the Daleks next year.
Hooray!
Indeed, hooray.
Well, at least that's what Stephen Moffat is implying or hinting at.
Which means they're all over it.
There hasn't been
any... It's the Dalek Master Plan Part 2.
Well, he said that there hasn't been any Dalek story planned so far, but that next year is still in the works, that 2011 is still in the works. And when they do come back, there'll be Daleks of every kind or something. I'm paraphrasing here. So that implies that we might see more than just the Hunchback. You know, Skittles Daleks. We'll see perhaps the older Daleks or something lower, unless he meant more colors. I don't know.
Boy.
I think he's playing the long game with the Daleks because he's introduced a lot of tidbits, a lot of sneaky things in there, like having a Dalek with all the different names, the different colors, and putting a little bit of mystery in there as into what each Dalek does and so on. So I think he is, you know, letting it sort of the Daleks be in the back of everybody's mind and thinking, well, they're going to come back, aren't they? We're going to see them again, but just you know, maybe not this coming series. And I think that is a welcome change because we've said it many times before, the Daleks have been done to death on Doctor Who, particularly in the newer series. And we want to see new and different and interesting monsters. And, you know, it was great that they kind of did that.
Yeah,
this series
if they show
the
up every year, it's not special.
Well, that's
exactly.
What I always say. It just dilutes their reappearance. You know, if they're going to come back and make a grand, you know, comeback, and if it just becomes now, if it's something that's obligated that every year they're there, then it just becomes something that you expect. So, okay,
yeah.
So which one is the Dalek episode, and how are the Daleks going to come back this year? And they've been back every year since the series came back in 2005, you know, albeit last year it was just a cameo in Waters of Mars, but it still counts. I mean,
yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I keep making the comparison to the 7 years of Tom Baker where they only had two stories and it didn't hurt Tom Baker or
it really didn't hurt the popularity, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not that I'm against the Daleks or against using the Daleks, but just, you know, they don't have to be every single year. They don't have to have, you know, just use them when needed. And it makes their impact even further, you know, gives a further impact to their return. So we'll see. I still have a sneaking suspicion that even if there's no Dalek story, we'll somehow see.
There'll be a glimpse of them,
there'll
perhaps
be some reference or, you know, just like we saw, you know, like the only time we saw a real Cyberman in the new series was in the Dalek
was
story
in Dalek.
With the head. So maybe we'll see like a Dalek part somewhere, you know, whatever. Somehow I think their presence will be seen or felt or heard or whatever. We'll see. The latest breaking news is that Sylvester McCoy. This has been rumored for a while because this goes back actually months that, you know, there was rumors that Sylvester McCoy was going to be cast in this new Hobbit movie that's still sort of like in limbo and still doesn't have a director yet. And I don't know. I thought
it's in a bit of limbo because of everything that's going on with United Artists and some of the issues that the studio is having. So that's pretty much a limbo issue. I don't think there's any doubt that a Lord of the Rings-ish movie will be successful.
Yeah. So originally wasn't Peter Jackson going to do it and then he wasn't?
Isn't
now
he still doing it?
He's still considering it or whatever.
Mm.
Well, wasn't it at one point, wasn't it Benicio del Toro who was going to do it, or is he... I can't remember whether Peter Jackson said he was going to do it first, and then Benicio del Toro, the guy who did Hellboy and Pan's Labyrinth and all that kind of stuff, he took over at one stage. I can't remember, because Peter had just quite a lot on his plate, to be honest, and he wanted somebody else to sort of take the reins a little bit. So I don't know if Peter's still producing it and Benicio's directing. I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, this is something that's been rumored for a while, and we actually had some confirmation on this a few months ago, but we're asked to hold back on it in our.
But originally, there was talk about Sylvester McCoy playing the Bilbo character. So now it's come to light that he is being cast as another character in this movie, supposedly. Mm.
Yeah,
a more minor part that's being expanded for the movie. So. Again, this is something that we had heard and for a while now, but now it's coming out and there's some confirmation on it. And Sylvester said, "Yeah, that's the deal." So, I'm sure, like many actors, he doesn't want to jinx anything, so he just kind of lays low until things are set.
Absolutely.
As more information comes to light about it, we'll keep reporting on it. So it's good to see Sylvester McCoy, on the big screen that will be internationally,
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's really good for him, and he's a terrific actor and highly underrated, I think. Another big news story that's come out from the Edinburgh International Television Festival is that Mark Thompson, who's the BBC Director General, has announced that the corporation is going to be aiming to release an international version of the BBC iPlayer within a year. So we've talked about this, well, certainly I have anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm sure people have been bored to tears with me farting on about it for ages. It just makes complete sense for them to do an international version of the iPlayer. And what's great about it as well is that they're also trying to develop a way for UK license fee payers who aren't necessarily within the UK to view the iPlayer for free. So, for instance, like expats or British servicemen and women around the world, they can gain access to the iPlayer without having to pay for it. So foreigners who don't pay a license fee will have the odd commercial or whatever, which is very common to a lot of the sort of TV on demand services here in the UK, like ITV Player or Channel 4 on demand and all that sort of stuff. That's a great way for the BBC to deliver their content and get some money and distribute it around the world. But equally, who's to say if people in the States or wherever, if they want to watch Doctor Who and they're willing to pay a license fee for it or a small fee, they could have a commercial free version.
Even for bleeding foreigners.
That's if they open it up to non-UK, people that want to pay a license fee. Because, up to now, they've been restricting that to just UK residents.
Yes, well, quite.
When you pay the license fee, is it, to my understanding, it's like per household, right?
It is per household, so you pay a one-off fee.
And that's collected like within your regular taxes? It's not...
It's your responsibility to pay it.
Okay.
So they don't assume that everyone has a television. But if everybody has a television or uses iPlayer, the idea is that you pay a license fee, which is your responsibility to pay for it. You can go down to the post office and get a form to fill in, or you can do it online. There are many, a whole host of different ways to pay for it.
And it's an annual fee. So I'm assuming that once you do that, once you initiate that, then there's some sort of account that's opened under your surname or whatever, or address or wherever,
Yes, yes, that's
so
right.
There must be some sort of identification, a unique ID number. So if they could use that, with a password to log in so that people, expats and servicemen and so forth could actually, anyone that's still paying a license fee could actually log in and use the iPlayer.
It should be something
that's doable, very doable.
Oh, absolutely. But the thing about it at the moment is that I don't know I mean, I'm sure that I have one for my account. I wouldn't be able to tell you what my, in inverted commas, account number or username was, because everybody pays for it in a slightly different way. I pay for it online every year, and it just goes out of my account on a direct debit. A lot of people,
Okay, so hold it right there. So you pay online, so that means you must log onto a website to pay for it, right?
Well, how I did it is that you don't necessarily log in. You have to put in your details, as in a address and an account information in terms of your credit card or whatever. And then you can either say, I just want to pay for it for 1 year, or I want it on a rolling sort of subscription. So you can either pay for it per month or per year, or say every year charge this amount to my account, or there's a whole host of ways.
It sounds like if I lived around the block from you, I could just, you know, go onto the website and punch in your address and say, yeah, I want to give James, you know, pay his license fee for the next, you know, year.
Absolutely. And many, many people do.
Really? Okay.
Parents, for instance, for the children when they go away as students or whatever, you know, they if they have a television or use iPlayer, they need a television license. So often the parents will pay it for
license
them.
License to watch TV.
Yeah. In actual fact, up until very, very recently, I think it's only within the past 2 or 3 years, there was no online way to pay for it. You had to go down to the post office, and all you needed was a little form which you filled in and paid it over the counter, and they stamped it for you and gave the form, part of the form, back to you. And that was proof that you'd paid your television license. So the idea being is back in, I should explain that back in sort of when I was growing up, the early 80s, 90s, that sort of time, they used to have a bloke that would come around with a van, and he'd have a piece of equipment. The van would have a piece of equipment attached to it, which would be able to basically pick up very large electromagnetic fields. So he would drive down the street, and if he spotted, and he'd look on the logbook to see who had a television license. And if he picked up a field coming from a house that didn't have a television license, then he would knock on the door and give you a massive several thousand pound fine. And that's how the television license was sort of enforced. But when computers came in, when personal computers became very, very popular, they couldn't do that anymore, because everyone who has a computer, it puts off a similar field, a similar signal. So you couldn't assume, therefore, that if they had a television license, if this field was coming from their house and they didn't have a television license, you couldn't assume it was coming from a television, because it could be a computer or some other form of electronic equipment, because a lot of the same technology is incorporated into many different things these days. Even, you know, stereos and so on, or fridges, have all sorts of different things in that can sure. play high wire with these things. So they put a stop to it. So as a result, within recent years, a lot of people haven't been paying their license fee and have been watching the BBC and have had a television for free. So it's hit the BBC very, very hard, and they've had sort of a deficit of fees where people haven't been paying it, which I think is really criminal when you consider, you know, you pay, it's something like 150 quid or maybe even less, certainly less if you're a pensioner or someone on a reduced income. It's nothing. It's like 50p a week or something to watch, or a pound or so a week to watch high quality television. And I don't understand why people don't pay it, but
now,
there
James,
we are.
Currently the iPlayer, is that available in via HTML5? In other words, can you watch it on your iPhone?
You can watch it on your iPhone, yes. The reason being is that on the web page they have it in Flash format. But you also can download it to your computer.
Like, do they have a specialized app for it?
They have a specialized app for it, but also which you need to download in order to play the content. But as well as that, they output all of their content in H.264. So you can play it on your iPhone or your iPad just through QuickTime.
Oh, okay, great.
Or the equivalent of QuickTime on the phone, which is brilliant. And that's always been the case. As long as the iPlayer has been around on the Mac, you've been able to watch it on your iPhone or iPad or Mac or whatever, which is brilliant, and I frequently do that myself. The only downside is that you have to watch it over a Wi-Fi network. You can't use 3G. You have to piggyback over Wi-Fi in order to download it, and it just streams to your iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is fantastic news if they, you know, if they do allow outside of the UK residents to actually use the iPlayer. That means people in, let's say, the States or Canada or Australia or wherever you happen to be outside of the UK, when the new series begins, you might be able to watch it. Is it that night that it's available on the iPlayer?
Yeah, it's available pretty much as soon as it's been transmitted on television.
All right.
They put out a version online at least within half an hour or an hour. Sometimes it's almost instant. And usually it's for 7 days.
And it's a clean version. In other words, it doesn't have Graham Norton on the lower third.
Exactly. It's completely clean. In the very early days, they did used to have some of the idents come up, like, and now on BBC One, Doctor Who or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, they'd have some of that, but they haven't. They now have a very specialised ident purely for the BBC, like it might say BBC One or whatever, and have the ident shown up on the screen, and that's it.
All right, fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully it pans out the way you would like it to pan out.
Mm. And it begs the question as well, is if you do have to log in with some form of password or whatever, that it may well mean that people who haven't paid their license fee, they may well be able to watch it as if you were in a foreign country where you get a commercial version. And I think that's great. That would be a very clever idea from the BBC, because it would make people pay their license fee not to watch these silly adverts and so on, which I think they really ought to clamp down on it more, because I think it's a real shame that quite a lot of people, and it will be in the millions, don't pay their television license.
Well, now it begs the question now, if they do make this available internationally, you know, whether or not they really would make it available for those outside of the UK to watch Doctor Who as it becomes available, because it will hurt, let's say, viewers on BBC America or Space or ABC in Australia. It may have an impact there. So they may purposely restrict it or wait until, hold back on the Doctor Who material until those networks have shown them.
Sure. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's going to be very dedicated fans and things who do watch this. And even that aside, the BBC's got to look after itself. And if they can make more money through showing content this way, then I'm all in favor of it. And even if that means that, you know, you piss off a few guys at Space or, you know, BBC America or whatever, sod them. The BBC's got to make money to survive. That's just the way it is, you know. And
well, the thing is, though, this is a very niche thing. I mean, unless you're a very techie person, or you know, you're plugged in somehow.
Exactly. Unless you're aware of it, or maybe even they may well spark up a partnership with Space or BBC America or whatever, where they directly advertise them on their site or have advertisements for their other programs. That, you know, it's perfectly possible that they could have some form of partnership going on there. I think that would be a great idea for them to do that, because that would increase their revenue even more.
Now, did they give an ETA on when this international player would be available?
They simply state within the next year.
Okay.
So any time between now and August / September of 2011, I suppose, which would be brilliant for fans of BBC shows around the world, really.
It'll be coming out in the summer break between series A and B of next year,
just to spite everybody who dedicated following of Doctor Who and whatever. No, but it's really great news, and I'm really thrilled to hear this, because a lot of people, it has been on a lot of people's radar for a long, long time, and I'm very happy that the Beeb have listened to their viewers and taken on board what people have been saying, because the Beeb are very good with that. And it's particularly impressive given the current government's prerogative to really slash public sector funding. And the BBC is a publicly funded service, and they do receive a lot of their money from the government as well as from licence fee payers. So even this past series of Doctor Who, they've really had to they've had a much tighter budget than ever before. And I think you could kind of see that in certain areas, but they did a superb job, the Beeb, with it, to say that they had a smaller budget than ever before. So there we are.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you, James.
You're welcome.
I am Lord President of Gallifrey. You can't put me on trial.
Speaking of Gallifrey, they added a few guests as well. And so I always, because Gallifrey is like the main landing.
We're the official podcast for Gallifrey, so absolutely. Mm.
For Galley. So I know they added Sheridan Smith, who plays Lucy Miller in the Paul McGann audios, mm-hmm, for Big Finish.
The radio series as well. Well, that's the Big Finish.
Yeah, she's fantastic, and she was just in Legally Blonde with Peter Davison. And Peter Davison,
she was, yeah.
There's a big to-do, so that's fantastic. And as well as Gareth Roberts and Clayton Hickman, Phil Ford, James Moran, a host of writers, including Doris Egan, who's going to be writing for the new Torchwood series. So that's...
very, very cool. Very
most,
cool.
Most excellent as far as Galley updates. And we're going to have a... we'll probably have some more Galley updates coming up in the next podcast or two.
And as well as all that, we're going to have our own set of mystery guests as we have every single year, and we've
we're
got
doing
our
the show live again, of course.
Yeah, on Sunday, our traditional spot.
Yeah, and we do have a few irons in the fire, I'm just waiting to finalize all that. And actually, speaking of irons in the fire and things that are not finalized, after we get off the air recording today, we're having another meeting about organizing our 25th anniversary soiree. It's a small, limited evening of friends from the Gallifreyan Embassy, as well as open to the public, and we'll have an announcement coming up as to all the details. It's mid-November. If everything goes as planned, it'll probably be Tuesday, November 16th, here on Long Island. It's a small gathering, probably along the lines of what you're doing this weekend, James.
Cool.
And perhaps even a guest or two. Nothing's set in stone just yet, but
well, it's early days,
space,
really, isn't it?
Right?
Exactly.
Can I make one other convention shout
Absolutely.
Out?
Absolutely.
Because this is a rare appearance for some American actors over in the UK. And I think, James, you said that, well, I don't know how to put it, but it's you're going to be here in the States, so somehow you're going to wind up missing this. But November 12th, 13th, and 14th of 2010 is Dimensions 2010 in Newcastle. And Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, and Paul McGann are going to be there, as well as friends of the show, Daphne Ashbrook and Yiji So. So very rare that the two of them are there with Paul and Sylvester. And you guys mentioned on the last show about the 96 movie coming to DVD in North America. It's out in the UK as well, but it's rare to have those guests. Mary Tam's there, as well as Nicola Bryant and Matthew Waterhouse and Paul Darrow and Jenny Linden and a host of guests. But I thought that was kind of cool that a rare occasion for some of the North American actors to make a UK appearance.
Some
love if you're going out that way. Say what's up to them in mid-November. 10th Planet Events, spelled out 10thplanetevents.co.uk for the details on it.
No, it's very cool. There's a whole host of different cool events sort of in the latter half of the year around November time, right? Because there's a Doctor Who event here in York, which you can find out information about at doctorwhoevents.co.uk. It's called The Gate, which is going to be an unofficial Doctor Who convention. But there's a whole host of fantastic guests going to be there, like a good friend of the show, Gary Russell, a whole host of producers, and Derek Riddle, who was in Tooth and Claw, is going to be there. It looks like it's going to be a fantastic convention, and it's going to last for all the weekend. And I'm going to try my best to go. Indeed,
all right.
I haven't said I'll go yet. I'll have to figure out what's going on because November's going to be a bit of a hectic month for me. But I'm going to. If I can't go, I will get one of my friends to go on my behalf to go and have a chat to people and maybe get a few interviews and whatnot. Who knows? Who can say?
I've done. A crazy amount of overtime at work in the last week.
You have, yeah.
Trying to do two things. One, book my trip to Chicago TARDIS in November to book my flights and hotel and whatnot for going to Chicago TARDIS. And two, to buy Roger Waters tickets because I know you're going, but to a different show. So I said, two things I want to do. I want to go see that concert and I want to go to Chicago TARDIS. Absolutely. It's just like a packed time. It seems.
Also, in a couple of months, there's in New York, there's the Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah, New York Comic-Con. And I think that Gene from Chicago TARDIS and Alien Entertainment is planning on having his booth again, as he did at the last one.
Well, I think Doctor Who Podshock is also being there, are going to be there
yes,
once again.
That's true. We're working out the details on doing a live recording at New York Comic Con, which is October 8th, 9th, and 10th, 2010. It's at the Javits Center in Manhattan.
Well, either way, we'll be there. They're reporting on the event.
Yeah. Tony Lee, I know, is already committed to going. Hopefully we'll get him on the show finally, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, we really need to.
Absolutely.
As well as throwing a few tasty beverages down the gullet.
Absolutely.
A few hundred tasty beverages. Sarah Douglas is going to that as well.
New York Comic Con?
Doctor Who Adventure Game fame.
She's going to be at New York Comic Con?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Cool. Very cool.
I owe her a Ruth Chris steak because we couldn't do that when she was here for Icon.
What brings her there?
She was in Superman.
Really?
Yeah.
Did she play? I didn't know that.
And, Comic-Con, Superman being a comic
I
and
guess
all.
So. All right. No, I thought maybe I was asking whether or not she was in a new project that I was unaware of.
Lewis is asking that like she, WWF superstar. It's like, no, she's not going to the wrestling convention. She's going to a sci-fi comic book thing. Silly rabbit
indeed.
I thought maybe she had something new on, and that we didn't know about.
She was just in Witchville. She's coming back in one of the new adventure games for next season.
Yes, apparently so. And I'll
get the details next month then.
She's currently in the adventure game playing the blob-like entity and Professor... what was her name? Professor Morrison? Professor something.
Yes, she played... I can't remember her name, but she played...
Yes, and please don't call her a blob-like entity. She's way too wonderful
to
call her.
She called herself that. If you look at the interview on our site, we have a video of her, and that's how she phrased it herself. So, Professor Meadows, she plays a blob-like entity and Professor Meadows. So check out the interviews. Mm-hmm. It's kind of humorous because she does kind of talk about playing a blob-like entity and saying that she never played a blob-like entity and didn't know how to exactly play a blob-like entity. I'm not going to go on.
Speaking of the adventure games, though, there's a great little new one that's just been released, new episode, where you get to fly the TARDIS and explore it and have a look around. And there's a whole new enemy, if you like, called the Entity. It's quite thrilling and quite fantastic. So catch it if you can. Download it now. I've downloaded it, but I've yet to play it. So
it's available.
Maybe
for the UK right now. It hasn't made its way.
It is.
To the commercial international sites yet, and still the Mac versions we still haven't gotten yet.
No, the Mac version is out now.
Oh, but it's not. The Mac versions aren't out to the direct-to-drive, commercial downloads.
Right, yes, yeah. Well, what I was meaning was that this time around, at least in the UK...
They simultaneously released the Windows and the Mac version?
That's right. Fantastic. Yes. Whereas previously there was a few, there was a couple of weeks delay between, you know, the PC version coming out and the Mac version coming out, which was a little bit frustrating, to say the least. Particularly as you know, a lot of the PC guys would go online and post spoilers and things about it, which I was a little bit gutted about. But there we are. It's nice that they've been doing simultaneous release, and hopefully they'll release the Mac version soon in the US, and well, indeed internationally, on the direct to drive thing. So yeah, there we go.
Alrighty. Well, I think we'll be right back. We're going to go into our interview with Deborah Watling, and then we'll come back after that.
This is Deborah Watling, and you're listening to Doctor Who Podshot.
This episode of Doctor Who Podshock is made possible in part by ongoing support from Doctor Who Podshock supporting subscribers. If you enjoy Doctor Who Podshock and would like it to continue and grow, now more than ever, please consider becoming a supporting subscriber. Remember, for a low monthly subscription fee, as a show support, not only will you be helping us continue and grow the show, but you get extra content as well. Plus, other ways of showing our appreciation include occasional giveaways to random supporting subscribers, discounts to special events, an email newsletter, and more, because we're always adding to that list. To become a Podshock supporting subscriber, simply go to thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net and click on the Podshock supporting subscriber banner on the top there. If you are already a Podshock supporting subscriber, thank you for your continued support. It does make a difference. Now, speaking of Podshock supporting subscribers, in our last episode of Doctor Who Podshock, episode 220, the extra edition, we had an interview with the legendary Doctor Who director Graham Harper, which came pretty much on the heels of our acclaimed interview with another legendary Doctor Who director, Waris Hussein, which can be found in Doctor Who Podshock 218. Waris Hussein was the first director of Doctor Who, directing An Unearthly Child back in 1963. Just as the episode of Doctor Who Podshock with Graham Harper was coming out, we also had the exclusive cover art for the upcoming reissue DVD of The Caves of Androzani on our site. The timing couldn't have been more perfect.
Caves of Androzani was recently voted the number one story of all time. 200 stories in Doctor Who history. And Caves was voted number one, and you know you got an award for it from Doctor Who magazine. Can you react to that?
I was I was surprised. I'm not going to belittle the amount of people. 6,700 people voted. They all have different opinions. So the majority of those people, it seems, by the skin of its teeth, I know, beat Blink. But Blink was my personal favourite of all Doctor Who's of all time that I know. I mean, I don't know every episode, but I absolutely loved it for its... It was brilliantly made and conceived, brilliantly written.
Very theatrical for a television project.
Yeah, spooky though, creepy, terrifyingly creepy. And for a story that didn't have the presence of Doctor Who, well, you felt the presence, but it didn't visually.
Doctor Light story.
Do you think it worked? It was stronger because of that?
No,
because it was out of reach. The Doctor was almost out of reach.
Yeah, so that's probably why it was so terrifying. Because there was no
the savior isn't there.
The savior had gone. But I found it as a piece of writing absolutely terrifying and brilliant. And for me, it was brilliant. So getting back to the
caves,
if everybody who's ever watched Doctor Who, you know, since the Hands of Time. Now voted. I don't think Caves would have. I hope it would have been in the top. No, I'm not being modest.
No.
I think I would love it to be somewhere in the first 10. That would be cool.
It was voted number one very, very recently. You know, with the Doctor Who magazine, everybody.
No, I know that. But what I'm saying is that I think since then, if you had a massive vote of everybody that watches Doctor Who, which would be more than 6,700, there's millions of people, I think Blink would have won.
Yeah, Blink was so
because it was popular. Very close thing, yeah. I know, by half a kind of percent of whatever.
Yeah. That was your first story to direct.
I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled it was anywhere. It's brilliant. Brilliant that anybody remembers from the 80s something that they think was...
Well, we just recently reviewed it for our podcast, and it still holds up relevant today.
Yes.
I mean, the pacing is there. It's a modern-day Doctor Who story, even though it was shot in the 80s.
That's great. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. It's that kind of story. It's the kind of story that if you could put it next to any of the current ones, and it holds up to any of the other ones.
Well, you can hear the whole interview in Doctor Who Podshock Episode 220, the extra edition. If you are a Podshock supporting subscriber, it's already in your personalized feed. But now let's turn to another interview. We had a chance to interview the lovely Deborah Watling, who played Victoria, a companion to the second Doctor.
Our guest is the lovely and wonderful
and lovely
Deborah Watling.
What a build-up. How wonderful. Thank you so much.
Are you enjoying your time in L.A.?
I am. Actually, I don't seem so surprised. I'm enjoying it very, very, very much. Because I haven't been back here for, gosh, 12, 14 years, something like that.
Wow.
The last time I was in this hotel, the Marriott, I was in the center of L.A. I don't know what it was, though.
The other location. I'm a New Yorker, so I can't be of any service to you.
Don't worry about it. But this one's quite a big one. I mean, you've got, 1,400 attendees? And
More than that now.
More?
Yeah, it was close to 1,600.
Well, I haven't really done a huge one like that for some years. I mean, as we were saying earlier, I do sort of like, I went to the Cavern Club and you had, I don't know how many were there, about 50?
Yeah, there was 50 people. It was, by comparison, it was tiny.
That's right. But, I mean, it's extraordinary out here because people here walk around in extraordinary costumes.
Yeah, we don't get that in the UK at all.
No, we don't do that. I think we're a bit more reserved.
Reserved, yeah.
But people come up to me and say, who do you think I am? And I have not the faintest idea.
The foggiest clue.
I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what do I say? Well, I say, you look very good, and did you make it yourself, and this, that, and the other? I said, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are. And it happened to me once years ago, in Kansas City. And they're all, as I say, dressed up in costumes, etc., etc. And this lovely young girl in a lovely frock to the floor, all corseted, and she said to me, who do you think I am? And I went, you're very pretty, but I haven't the faintest idea. She said, I'm you, Victoria. Oh, no. Dropped one there, didn't I?
Oops.
Her little face went, oh. I said, no, you are absolutely beautiful. It's just that I'm a bit tired, a bit jet-lagged. I didn't recognise you.
Is it amazing that people, and I was your host, your MC Friday night, that room was packed and people were cheering and going crazy, and I even asked for a show of hands of people who were meeting you for the first time, and you saw how many hands went up in the air. Is that amazing?
It's extraordinary, because I did the program, over 40 years ago. And when I did it, it was a one-off for me, a year, and I got a year's work, and I thought, this is great, being employed. I never, ever realised that I would come back after 40 years, be sitting here at the table with you and all these fans, etc., and they remembered me, and people know my episodes exist, you know.
That haven't been unfortunately wiped.
Unfortunately wiped, which I think is a travesty. But
do, absolutely.
Can you reenact them for us right now?
So, well, let's start with the first one. I'll dig out the script and James will play the doctor.
If only.
He has the waistcoat, so he's
I'm doing
like
a Tony
Matt
Lee.
Smith, actually.
Really?
A bit like Matt Smith, you do.
That's a huge compliment.
Oh, good.
And he's turning red. Making him turn red.
Stop. The first time she's made me go red. It's wonderful.
What are you talking about?
We have the videotape.
Let's take a trip in the TARDIS back to when you were in the show, in your first episode on Evil of the Daleks. You're coming onto the show. Patrick's now established as the Doctor. Fraser's there as well. He's established as Jamie. And now you're coming in. Are you intimidated at all coming into a show like that?
I wasn't, actually, because I'd done a few shows before on TV, etc., and theatre, whatever. And as I say, I thought it was, you know, going to be another job, a year's work, great. So I treated it as such. I met Fraser and Pat before we actually started filming, and we got on so well, so it was a bit of a doddle, really. It really was. And it came to the rehearsing, and we just enjoyed it. I kind of fitted in very well.
Yeah, it's clear that you really clicked.
Did. We did click, and we had this sort of chemistry between the three of us, which actually works. And when I see the old episodes now, I think, yes, it did work, this one. It really did with the three of us, because, as you know, we became a family. Mm. We ignored it. When we broke for a weekend, had to come back on the Monday, I couldn't wait to get back to see the boys, you know.
Mm. The two devils.
The two devils. Yes.
Always being.
They're a bit naughty.
Yeah.
Even naughty Pat was, nice. Actually. Yes, but Pat was very twinkly, a bit naughty.
But was that...
I'm not going to say anything else.
It sounds like that whole situation was sort of exacerbated by Fraser. The two would really play off each other. And when you were interviewed the other day, you were saying, you know, about the whole situation with the foam and when you were on Margate Beach.
Oh,
and
yes.
They dumped you straight in there. They collaborated and,
that's
you know...
They did. You yeah. know, they never told me what's going on because, you know, they set me up rotten. They played all these tricks on me. And I always had to be very aware. I'm thinking, now, what are they going to do today?
Well,
what's going to happen?
What I want to know is, did you ever get your own back on the two of them?
Not on Pat, God bless him.
But certainly on Fraser.
I did it on Fraser once. and I got my... Well, I got him back, actually. It was in Liverpool. We had a convention there. And I was doing a panel with Fraser, just me and Fraser. And there were two Cybermen, you know, just standing there. Halfway down the auditorium. And I actually said to them, look, I primed them, and I said, now, look here. You've got these spray cans of foam, that string foam.
Yeah, silly string
yeah,
sort of
silly
stuff.
Silly string stuff. And I said, when I give you the nod or the wink, just start...
Coating
coming
him.
Towards him very slowly, and then come up on the stage and do your business with the string, you know, the foam. Fraser came on fine in a lovely silk suit. He loved all that, you know, his clothes, except silk suits in those days. He was in t-shirts and jeans now, isn't he? But never mind, the past that one.
Well, he scrubs up well from
he
time to
scrub
time.
Up well, yes, yes, for his age, dear, yes.
Sorry, don't let him hear
hello,
that.
Hello. Anyway, so we did the interview, and halfway through, I went, gave the Cyberman the wink. And you can see Fraser. Seeing them coming up to him, still talking about the question he was asked, etc. And then they came right up, and his eyes were getting wider and wider, thinking, what on earth is going on? All of a sudden, they lip-rip with his phone. And all he could do, he jumped up, and he looked down, and just went, my suit, my wonderful suit. And I said, I've got your back, Fraser.
And you're sitting in the back stick
yeah.
ring, weren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, I got your sunshine. And he went, he growled a bit.
Did he?
Yes.
But clearly he forgave you because here you
oh,
are
he
today.
Did.
Yeah.
He
How could he not? How could he not?
And now you see, when you come to a convention and you see each other, you, Fraser, what's it like? Is it like you haven't, like, time hasn't even gone by, like you've just seen them yesterday, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it is actually.
You pick right up?
Because we pick straight up, that's it. He always calls me Little Debs. He always used to call me Little Debs, and he still does to this day. Oh, Little Debs. He said, oh, I like the new hair. Oh, that's much better. Not all straight back, he said. I said, pardon? Oh, and I, oh, look, and you're a bit fuller in the face. That's much better. I'm saying, thank you, Fraser. Oh, Little Debs. You know, it's just, it's our relationship.
A little bit of mischief and a little twinkle in that eye, isn't it?
Exactly, yes.
There's definitely chemistry there between you two. Mm.
Oh, yes.
It's well known that I live for listening to the old stories on CD because we can't watch them, and sit and imagine and imagine what the episode was like, and hearing you and hearing Fraser and hearing Patrick in classic stories, The Fury from the Deep and The Enemy of the World and stuff. And do you have an understanding of when people like me, like other Doctor Who fans, that you're in their world at any point that
somewhere in someone's home in their car or their, while they're cleaning their house or something, that someone is there listening and imagining what it was like to watch that.
I wasn't aware.
Until now, of course.
Until now. Actually, and I realize now that people are still interested in the classics, the classic Doctor Who's, the black and whites even. Mm. And I find it fascinating and very flattering that they still remember us, because I thought, you know, the new Doctor Who's come out and we'll be forgotten totally, you know, the old veteran girls, but we haven't.
If anything, have you seen a resurgence?
Yeah, I have. Yes, I have indeed.
And it crosses generations, because even the new kids who are following the current show are taking an interest in watching the older stuff and seeing what happened back then and want to know the history.
That's right, they are. When I am signing, whatever, and Dad comes up with a son, you know, a little toddler, whatever, who about 8 years old, and I say, well, who's the fan? Well, Dad was the fan. And I said, right, so your little boy doesn't know anything about me. And he said, oh, yes, he does, because he likes all those videos or whatever, and DVDs, because he watches you and he knows exactly who you are. So they watch from the classics right the way through, because they're interested. All the kids are interested. And I think that's amazing. Yeah, really
that's,
is.
That's fantastic. And there's a toy company called Character Options that are now going back. They're doing current toys from the current series, but now they're going back and doing classic figures.
Are they the... are they the tiny figures?
They're about
5 inches tall.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So maybe we'll have a figure of you.
I think we're going to see a Victoria figure.
Oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it? Oh, yes, I look forward to that one.
Will you buy one?
Get off.
So many funny stories happened, and we would have to have a 18-hour podcast to go through them all. Do you have a favorite, a moment that anytime you, it just makes you laugh, even in the craziest, the most spontaneous moments where you think back to something and you just have to smile and laugh?
I have several of those for the funny stories. As you say, we can't go through them now. But I do still laugh, especially like the Nicker story, which has haunted me all my life, all my career, really, because everyone knows about Victoria's knickers. And that is charming, isn't it? Anyway, it's just, it does make me laugh, isn't it? Little episodes, etc., between me, Pat and Fraser, that still makes me laugh. It makes me chuckle. Because I have a lot of good memories, very, very good memories. And they'll never be forgotten. I will always have it up here in my head. And I will never forget Pat, because he'll always be in my head. And all the times we had together.
We talked on stage about, there's a moment in Tomb of the Cybermen, which is, a lot, for us, the only full story that we have of Victoria. And there's a beautiful moment in there where Pat speaks, as the Doctor, speaks about his family and the bit of poetry. And you mentioned that that was actually one of, like, a moment that was very, very important to you. You thought that was something that was really wonderful. And can you speak about that?
I remember that scene very well, because I live somewhere away. I used to drive in. And that day, I couldn't, because I had terrible flu. I was very ill. So they sent a car for me. And I knew I was going to have to do this lovely scene. I did other scenes, of course. I got to that scene, and I was absolutely exhausted. I was gone. But it seemed, it wasn't acting. Pat and myself had a, I didn't know what it was. It was like just talking to a friend. Like, it wasn't scripted. It just happened. And in those days, you couldn't cut whatever. And I went right the way through the scene, and on the last line, I fluffed. So I had to do the whole thing again. And Pat said to me, you're all right. I know you're hot. I know you've got a temperature. But let's do it again. I said, of course. And we did it. And after the scene, he came up and he kissed me and he said, that was wonderful. That was it.
That's fantastic. We want to thank you for spending some time on PodShock today, and letting, and particularly letting me gush for a few minutes, and having you here,
right?
For,
delightful
for us to be able just to sit here and grab a little bit of your time. I know you're probably very tired. It's been a very long weekend. So many people have been pulling you this way and bringing you this way. So.
Tell you what, I've enjoyed every minute. I've enjoyed sitting down with you lot, you boys.
Thank you so much.
The lovely Deborah Watling. We thank her for taking some time out of her busy schedule at Gallifrey 21 to speak with us on Doctor Who Podshock. You know, we're celebrating 25 years of the Gallifrey Embassy, a quarter of a century. Wow, I feel old. To that end, we have been holding anniversary events throughout the year. In fact, we mentioned our next upcoming event in November earlier in this show. This past May, we celebrated the 25th anniversary at our seasonal meetup on Second Life. We had a fantastic time then. We are also celebrating 5 years of Doctor Who Podshock. Yes, it's the fifth anniversary of Doctor Who Podshock. This past month at our meetup on Second Life, we brought the roof down celebrating the fifth anniversary of the show. Literally. We had so many people there at once that at one point the server crashed. Yes, the sim had to be restarted before recrawl returned. We all like scattered across the universe until we were able to get back to the Doctor Who experience where we were holding our event. We did some recording at the event, though it was a big party, so there wasn't really any time to do a formal show. We just had a few clips that we want to share with you today, and at the event was Lewis Bailey of the Happiness Patrol podcast. He was there to wish us a happy fifth anniversary, and we thank Lewis for that.
All right. We're live from Second Life.
This is Doctor Who Podshock, and I'm here with Lewis Bailey. Well, where is Terry? Terry was here from the Dirty Gurus podcast.
I'm over back. Here.
She's no.
To say bad words.
Yeah.
So, how are we doing here on our Second Life party here, our meetup here? This is our August meetup. We're celebrating the fifth anniversary of Doctor Who Podshock. But
happy anniversary!
Thank you.
Happy anniversary.
Also, the 25th anniversary of the Gallifrey Embassy, and we do these meetups here every season, so every 3 months. So we were here back in May, and we'll be back here again in November. We had such a big party that we crashed the sim earlier, so we had to reassemble back once
It's a big party.
Yeah. The sim was running again.
And it's crashed.
It's crashed. So it's we literally crashed the party in more ways than one.
Yay!
It's absolutely nutty. I can't believe you'll just let anybody in here. So far, I've seen a dancing hot dog and a giant Dalek with boobs.
Well, we don't discriminate.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, as I said earlier, there was a Dalek here serving hamburgers and chips and soda. So, you know, we put them to work.
I will serve you.
Oh, God, please don't.
I am your servant.
So we're at the end of the Matt Smith series, the first series with Matt Smith. What did everyone think of his first outing?
Woo!
He was a great doctor. Oh, come on.
He's the best. I
mean, Matt Smith is great.
He's the best since the show came back. He's the most doctorish.
Hey.
I think it was wonderful that he was able to make about David Tennant. You know? I mean, almost immediately. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Even though I love David Tennant, it was just great that he's able to capture the character like that.
He made the part his own immediately.
David Tennant was he made it his own, yes, absolutely. And that's what the great actor does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're standing
I'll
here.
I'll say that my favorite doctor is Tom Baker. And I have to say, I feel like he embodies my doctor.
Well, I think there's a Tom Baker is in a bit in him as well. Well, that sounds a bit naughty.
Tom Baker is 70s now.
These Second Life parties bring out a bit of a naughty side of us. Old hat for Dirty Hoos, I would imagine.
The naughty side. Which side is your naughty side, Lewis?
Well, right now
Lewis
it's
has a naughty
my left side.
You're mistaken. That's a knotty side. It's got a piece of string with knots in it.
So we're standing in a replica of Stonehenge here, and it seems that we were earlier. Victor was giving us a TARDIS tour, and we went to David Lewis's land of Doctor Who, which had a replica of not only Stonehenge but the Underhenge as well.
Yeah, that wasn't Dave's place. We couldn't make it to Dave's place because, it was just too many.
One of the podcasters said it sounded like an item of Victorian underwear.
So, what land was that?
Then, in my apartment and see my underheads.
It was the land we went to. Was
I say, that's quite an underhenge.
Don't you mean?
So, if you come here, you want to visit Stonehenge and Underhenge, go to two islands.
Poor Lewis.
Bobby's
gonna have to do on his own.
It's his party, and he'll cry if he wants to.
And believe me, I'm sure he will be crying after this party.
Lewis will just insert a joke here.
Insert joke here.
Shush, children.
Would you care to slip into my underhenge?
Oops.
I bet you care to all the time.
This is a big one, isn't it, Jamie?
Yes. Well, if you're going to play with it like that, it's going to drop off.
Placing my glass to Potshock.
Yay.
Terry, if it weren't for Potshock.
Cheers!
That's our Graham Sherry.
Can you believe the size of an underhenge, Doctor?
Okay.
Don't go into
that. As I'm required to do.
Answer me this.
Sorry.
You crazy nuts.
If it, your underhenge last week.
How many?
I'll bring a few extra friends next time.
How many podcasters do we have that owe their podcast careers to this man right here, Louis Trapani? And
so that would be me. Is this stupid question?
It is stupid question. This is me kissing up to Louis Trapani, Tom.
Okay.
Louis, Uncle Lou, I'm going to put it down. Louis is the one who said to me to do it. Go and try and do a podcast. And yes, I went out and did a podcast. Started off second as a
movie. Come on,
I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
He's the Doc Podfather.
Possibly the worst one ever with all the noise in the background.
So what did everyone think of The Big Bang?
Ooh, F and off.
Well, thank you.
And there.
Worst episode ever.
Hey, I like The Big Bang.
I don't know.
We'll come back to my bus.
We fought the Pendalga opening.
I'm so sorry.
Gay bar.
I'm so sorry.
The Big Bang with Georgie.
What was that about? The opens being the gay bar?
The Pendalga opens being the gay bar.
I know. You know what? He was right in.
The Big Bang with Georgie.
Oh,
Pandora's is a happy bar.
You see what happens when you just let anybody in?
Yeah. This podcast went from general audiences to now explicit.
What, you missed all underhand joke earlier?
Oh, sorry.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, stop it. Get a grip. I thought it was a pretty good episode.
You can't see what Ron Moonstone's actually been to my kilt either.
Oh, my.
I don't know.
That was the best
episode. The ending of this series is better than... any other
one?
RTD ending except for maybe the first season with Eccleston. Yeah. I'm sorry. The Master with the Magic Potion? No. Tenet as Jesus Christ? No.
What about the second season?
Oh, you act like there's never been a Time Lord that's levitated before.
It was wrong.
So it's just like the demons.
Think about Space Jesus.
No,
the demons is good. If you really think about it.
The Moffat let me down.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Moffat let you down? Crazy. You're crazy.
Not quite as ridiculous as the RTD episode, but, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous, but for some reason it works.
You've got to think of the budget I've got to work with, you know.
Yeah,
and then I get some of my pals around to write the script. It all turns out to be a bug a dog, really. I mean, I did well with the money I got here, so, you know.
Yes.
Oh, no. I blame the guy who's part of the League of Gentlemen, really.
Is that someone named Moffat? That's a really good Moffat.
It's a good Moffat.
That was really good.
Graham.
Well, we recorded a lot more at the event, but as I said, it was a party atmosphere. There were a lot of people talking over each other, so that was just a sample of it there. And even that had to be chopped down a bit. And that was even without the music being played, because we had a live DJ there, and I was able to turn off the music on my recording side so that it wasn't being picked up. But it was still being played there, so it didn't give you the full sense. And plus, with Second Life, you really have to see what's going on, and you're only getting half the story here because you're only hearing and you're not seeing what's being shown on the screen at the time. So it's a better experience being there than just hearing it. And besides the point, there were people that were having tasty beverages. So I'm sure that added to the mayhem. I was just having coffee, seriously. That's all I was having. But I can't speak for everyone else. We also want to thank Victor First Mornington for his help, as always, for putting this all together, as well as everyone responsible for the Doctor Who experience and Who Island as well. Edward Pierce was there once again doing a fantastic job spinning tunes, DJing the event. Victor even allowed me to pilot the TARDIS on one of the TARDIS trips. Now, that was really cool. Special thanks to Podchuck supporters Dave Cooper, Graham Sheridan, Terry Lightfoot, Perry Garrickins, Helen Lesser, Ronald Thomas, and as well as other supporters there, and that I may not have known your Second Life name. Thank you all who attended, all too numerous to mention here. During that clip from our party last month, you heard that Terry mentioned that Tom Baker is her favorite Doctor, or one of her favorite Doctors, and it is for many Doctor Who fans, especially longtime Doctor Who fans. And good news, everyone, Tom Baker is back. Yes, Tom Baker reprises his role as the Fourth Doctor in the first of five thrilling brand new adventures, audio dramas, Demon Quest. The first one available is The Relics of Time. This is by Paul Magars, and it stars Tom Baker with Susan Jameson as Mrs. Wibsey. And it's available now via Audible. Audible is the leading provider of digital audio books. They have over 75,000 titles to choose from every genre, be it thrillers, business, history, science fiction, fantasy, and more. Audible content is compatible with iPods, MP3 players, iPhones, over 500 devices for your listening anytime, anywhere, just like this podcast. For you, listeners of Doctor Who Podchalk, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial, just so you have a chance to check out their service. How cool is that? Now, to download your free audiobook, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap for your free audiobook. You're driving, you can't remember the URL, don't worry. Just go to podchalk.net or gallifreyanimacy.org, and you'll find banners and links there for it as well. And as always, we like to make a recommendation or suggestion of what you could choose as your free book. You can choose, you don't have to choose this, you can choose anything they have to offer. But it's always exciting when Tom Baker comes back in the role as the Fourth Doctor, since it's been so rare lately, though he was back recently in The Hornet's Nest. And now he's back in The Relics of Time, Demon Quest 1. The Doctor's return to Nest Cottage lands him in trouble when a key component from the TARDIS disappears. Let's hear a little of that right now.
And so those few dark days before Christmas inched along. Snow fell, and Mrs. Wibsey came and went, banging and clattering about with boxloads of stuff from the attic and the cellar. I paid her little attention.
What about this? Will you be needing this any more?
What? No, I'm busy. Go away.
Suit yourself.
Meanwhile, I was wholly concerned with the various components from the TARDIS console, which I had scattered about the parlour and the dining room. Truth be told, I had been a little over-enthusiastic in some of my dismantling.
That looks like a proper dog's dinner.
I know a dog who'd argue with that. Anyway, what would you know about relative dimensional engineering?
Nothing at all.
No.
But I'd know better than to get marmalade in the workings.
And with that, she was gone down to the church hall in a flurry of biscuit tins and eiderdowns. I continued to tinker in the warm glow of the hearth fire, examining then reassembling each component of the TARDIS console. It was around about midday when I started to look for the spatial geometer I'd earlier dismantled. That's funny. I'm sure I put the pieces down here somewhere. I searched high and low, but it was only when my eyes fell upon a broken teacup nestling amongst my high-tech paraphernalia that my suspicions began to grow. Oh, no. She hasn't, has she? Mrs. Whimsy! Mrs. Whimsy! My scarf and coattails flew as I dashed across the village to the church hall. I was soon immersed in a sea of herringbone coats and knitted hats and the musty smell of sandalwood.
Hello, Doctor. Come to find some new togs. There's a lovely cardigan here.
Mrs. Whimsy's stall was lavishly stocked, and mostly with belongings of mine. What was more, she had already made £23.57 out of sundry artifacts.
I did explain to you that cottage of yours was far too cluttered.
Everything comes in useful at some time or other, Mrs. Whimsy, do you hear me?
I didn't think you'd miss any of this old rubbish.
You must let me be the judge of that. You have no idea what kinds of things I'm storing at Nest Cottage. Things that should never see the light of day. I mean, what's this doing here?
Newfangled nonsense. I don't hold with gadgets.
Mrs. Whimsy, this is the cordless answer phone gadget I installed at Nest Cottage last Boxing Day. It's important, and very cleverly souped up for my own special purposes. Someone may try to get in touch with me.
Keep your voice down. Deirdre Watts, it's earwig in.
Never mind.
Ooh. Yes, Tom Baker is back in The Relics of Time, Demon Quest 1. Once again, this could be your selection or any other. To download your free audiobook today, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap, A-R-T-T-R-A-P, for your free audiobook. Or go to our website, podshock.net or thegallifreyanembassy.org. Hey, good news, everyone. Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi has returned with a new episode. Dave A.C. Cooper of Doctor Who Podchuck joins me, Louis Trapani, as co-host in this episode in which we discuss the new Torchwood series coming to Starz in the U.S., Series 4 of the Sarah Jane Adventures. We invite our younger listeners for their reviews of K-9, the series. Plus, we discuss Sherlock, the Deep, Ashes to Ashes, Merlin, and more. It also features part of an interview with Brian Croucher, who plays Travis, the second Travis, in Blake 7. So check it out. Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi. Go to arttrap.com/British Sci-Fi for details. We are back on Doctor Who Podchuck. Once again, thanks everyone for attending our 5th anniversary event there on Second Life last month. You heard part of our interview with director Graham Harper, and that was a great interview with Deborah Watling.
You'll have to pay close attention because we're going to be releasing a whole host of different interviews that we did at Galley very, very soon.
We're going to wrap things up here and want to thank everyone for being involved. We do have more feedback than we're going to get to in future episodes. As always, you can send us your feedback at by sending it to feedback@podshock.net, and you can also call our public call box, which is a voicemail system, and that's since it's an audio podcast, that probably might work best by calling 206-600-6517, and you can speak to Ken, James, and I, well, in a sense. You can leave a message for us.
Virtually.
Ken, I know we were just talking about off-air. There's a silly rumor going around the tabloids now about Karen Gillan not knowing whether or not she's going to be continuing her role, whatever. And so there's this going all over the.
Well, the first half of the season cliffhanger will be the death of Amy.
So
that's my prediction.
Won't be the first time that
happened. Then we come back and she didn't die. Yeah.
But again, these are all these tabloid stuff, and you got to take. I think it was, which I don't know which tabloid it was. It doesn't make a difference. But
The Sun, was it?
Yeah.
on this one.
And yeah, another note with these, because on a related note, a few weeks ago or maybe a month ago, all over the press was Karen Gillan was having a bad hair day and had pictures of her and all that. And everyone was, come on, give her a break. Everyone has a bad hair day. I mean, I know we're desperate for
some
news.
People have bad hair decades.
Yeah, but and then. I'm not going to get started, because all these Doctor Who fans and blogs and whatever start, echoing the same news and all that. I'm like, granted we're lacking Doctor Who news without the series there, but, just because every tabloid goes with it doesn't mean, you have to go with it too. And just because they print something that might be distasteful doesn't mean that you got to report it as news as well. And I don't know. It just gets I'll get off my soapbox.
So much for the show being over.
Yeah, well, it's over now.
All righty then.
All right, well, until next week.
Yes.
Cheers, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll be back next time with more Doctor Who Podshock. Remember, as always, in between Doctor Who Podshock episodes, to visit thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net to stay on top of all Doctor Who news and information, or just if you want to discuss Doctor Who stories or episodes or whatever you like, gallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. There on the left-hand side column, you'll see a sidebar there, and if you scroll down, you'll see links there to follow us all on Twitter. If you'd like to follow us there, you can follow Doctor Who Podshock as well as all the hosts and correspondents of Doctor Who Podshock. Make full use of our forums on our site, once again, podshock.net or gallifreyembassy.org.
Cheers.
Indeed. Cheers.
You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run gallifreyembassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
Well, you've been fiddling with it, haven't you?
It was perfectly all right until you touched it.